Welcome to About Sex, the podcast about love, relationships, and sex. My name is Josh, and with me is Angela Skirtu, a marriage and sex therapist in St. Louis. Hi, Angela.
Hello, Josh. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Thanks for being here. So this week we wanted to talk about fetishes, but I'm not sure exactly what that topic is. Why don't you start us off?
Sure. Well, so
what is a fetish?
A fetish is actually a little different than a kink. So I want to start with the difference between the two. So a fetish is actually when somebody has a requirement of something specific to get off. So for example, a person who has a real foot fetish would need to see feet, to maybe kiss feet, to touch feet in order to get off. They could not get off without it. That is the true like DSM definition of a fetish. Whereas a kink is just when people sometimes like to have feet involved, but that's not a requirement. That like they could like feet, they could also
feel like
you're
toys. Fixating on feet a little bit.
Well, because that was the story I used.
Well, I didn't bring up feet at all.
So like that's actually why people in the kink community sometimes are like they feel like people misunderstand them because they think do people think we're weird because we like this stuff?
Right.
It's like, no, actually, no. Most people have
they
little
like
kinks or interests and they're just having fun. But a fetish is when it's like, oh no, I can't get off without
they
this.
They have a fixation on that and they have to have that to have any erotic feelings.
And one thing we usually see is it's a problem in the relationship too, because maybe the partner who wants it is like really like fixated on it, but the person on feet or on like it can be a bunch of things. It could be on panties, it could be you know, different things.
Sure.
But then their partner is like, could we do something else? Like, I'm okay with feet sometimes, but like, does it always have to be
it's
this?
Like,
could it be
no.
anything else?
Why do you have to constantly rub my feet? It's so aggravating. Here, rub my foot.
Exactly.
Oh, like, you poor thing.
One fetish is called frauderism. I think that's how it's pronounced, where somebody like rubs their junk against the butt of another person.
I call that grinding.
And like, as long as it's consensual, that's fine. But this is another part of a fetish is sometimes it's not consensual. So like if you're in a subway or in a train and somebody just kind of like comes up behind you and rubs their junk against
you. I get that all the time.
That would be a non-consensual
situation. Let me tell you, anytime I'm on a train, if I'm not getting rubbed by somebody's genitals, something's wrong.
Well, and this is an important difference, Josh. So like, kink community is very big on everything being consensual. So if you do anything, your job is to make sure the other person is totally involved, totally enjoying it. Whereas a fetish, not always. Sometimes they're doing things non-consensually.
So maybe you'd go on the train and say, excuse me, madam or sir, do you mind if I rub my junk on you?
That would at least be consensual if
and
the
then
person
they
said
would
yes.
Say, hold on, let me get my gun. And then I'll consider your options.
That would totally happen. Like, could you imagine somebody really doing that on a train?
Yeah, that's why they don't ask. That's why that's why a fetish like or a kink or fetish like that
it's
falls
into
a problem area because not everybody's okay with that. It's a lot like exhibitionists or people who like to like see other people naked who don't know they're there.
Those would be more on that fetish side.
Those fetishes are built around non-consent, actually.
So those are two requirements for it to fall under a like true fetish, like the problem. It has to be either non-consensual.
So you would say a fetish is a problem.
A
versus
fetish
a
would
kink
be a problem versus
is something
a kink
you do
is
that's
something
a hobby.
That's just a it's a
it's
fun
like,
hobby
oh,
and playful.
I like
something
to macrame and I like to rub my wife's foot on my face. Done.
Well, at least in terms of mental health, that is what a fetish is considered.
Correct.
But people use fetishes interchangeably.
So they
in
use
life.
The word for kink sometimes instead of fetish?
They do. They
when
do.
When reality, they're actually saying kink.
Yeah, they're really meaning kink, but because fetish is used and people don't understand the different definitions, they may not see what's going on there.
Yeah.
So anyhow, that's the difference between a fetish and a kink. And the big thing is if it is a fetish, you're trying to avoid, like, if it's a fetish, it's either non-consensual or it's causing somebody, like, emotional harm. They're freaked out by it.
So, next, why don't we talk about something in the therapy realm? I always was curious what actually happens inside the therapy office. Do you just sit around and talk and chat and talk about your feelings and, you know, everything, the world is so hard? Or do you actually have like a plan of treatment? Like, do you talk to them and find out what's going on? And then if so, like, what are the treatments that therapists actually provide? How do you help people?
Well, I mean, there can be a long or a short answer to that.
Well, so. We have time, so.
Oh, well, okay.
Let's do the long.
Well, the long answer is each session has
this
a similar.
This feels a little too long for me.
What?
Yeah. Let's go to the short again.
Okay. Well, let's just kidding. Start with the first session.
Okay.
When somebody first comes in, my job is to ask a bunch of questions to basically assess what's going on.
Right.
What are the different problem areas? I'm assessing things for history. I'm also like watching how a couple is talking together.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, get a view into a therapist's world. I see people talk to each other all day. So some things I'm looking for are their interaction processes. Mostly I deal with couples. I do deal with individuals, but right now I'm describing a couple session.
Right. Sure.
But yeah, I do both and only adults.
Only okay? adults. You don't work with kids.
I don't work with kids.
And you mostly work with couples and what you're describing is couples or somebody with multiple personality.
Yeah, talking that's to true. I suppose there could be a few people in their head, but
yeah,
yes.
They could have a whole round table going on.
Exactly. Let's have a roundtable discussion with you and all of your problems.
So first session.
So first session, I'm asking questions about history. I'm watching them to see how they fight too, because this is a key component for like how I'm going to teach them how to be better partners. If they already have a lot of communication skills, then I'm not going to need to teach them that. But like if they talk and even the way they talk is very combative or very avoidant, there's two different things you see that are usually very problematic. Either they're fighting and they're not listening to each other. Or they are like, it's like me kind of like trying to pull people out of their shell. Like, and it's a really hard job and I have to like ask.
So they're turtles.
Yeah. We like little turtles.
They're turtling.
Yeah, you're trying to pull
them
out of that
shell.
They're trying
to hide from their feelings.
But those teach me a lot about how they are as a couple, you know, and how I need to help them.
So then you learn what their problem is in that first session.
I learned they develop goals.
And then you set goals. That's
we set
the first.
Goals. And if I can, if I have enough time, I try to give them one thing to work on.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends. Because like, depending on how complex the problem is, we could just get to assessment in that first session.
Yeah.
But then after that, what happens is sessions kind of have a specific format. It starts with about a 5-minute check-in to see how they're doing and then check on homework. Because I always give homework, or actually recently a client said to me, I hate the term homework. Can we come up with a new term? So I said extracurricular activities. So those are their homework.
Yeah, nobody wants to do homework.
I know, right?
Like,
it makes
Mom,
you feel like a student.
I don't want to do homework.
So I give people extracurricular activities between sessions. And I'm a sex therapist too, so let's be honest.
What's an example of one? Let's say a couple who's having a lot of arguments about something.
Like a homework assignment I would
do? Yeah, what would be an example of one?
I might teach them about...
Or you're trying to teach them how to fight better, maybe.
I would teach them either how to be better at listening to each other, or I'd teach them about the criticism defensiveness cycle.
So what's the first part? What's the first one?
The validation one.
How do you do that?
Basically, you're teaching people to be more empathetic. And so, like, if they're combative, they're not probably showing any empathy. So my job is to slow them down. If they're having trouble, like, being calm, I may teach them how to, like... bring their energy down so that they're actually able to listen, because if you're like heightened in a session, then it's hard to listen already.
Yeah.
And so it may be
Sorry,
teaching
what were
them
you saying?
Some stress
I was,
relief.
I really wasn't listening there.
Why weren't you listening?
I'm just messing with you.
I know, right? So it may be some stress relief so they can listen. But then even beyond that, it's teaching them to really hear.
So what
the
how do you teach them?
Saying.
Like, what's the exercise they do at home for their homework?
Okay, well, so there's this skill sheet I give people called the two levels of validation.
Two levels.
And there's actually six, but the other four are just so
They're
complex.
They're just extraneous.
They're extraneous.
You only need to validate a little bit. First level validation, that's okay. Second level, you're done.
Well, for any therapist listening who've ever actually read the six levels, the other four are very therapy-like, and so they're kind of annoying to read if you're just a person on the street.
Yeah.
So that's why I avoid the last four.
Nobody likes to read. I mean, come on.
No, my clients are actually pretty educated. I'm giving people like videos or podcasts or articles to read between sessions, and most of my people are like on it.
Yeah, they're going to tell you they read that, definitely.
No, we'll have conversations about it at the beginning of the next session.
That's
no,
good.
I really do. I have a very educated crowd.
I'm surprised because most of the people around me don't read.
Well, you got to understand, if you have a problem, you want to fix it. So if I tell you, hey, this will help you fix your problem, and it's sex, people like
So do you feel
sex.
Like the more motivated clients who really want to get better, they do better?
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing. Like, so clients need to, like, there's things that they do to make their situation better. Like, couples who are doing better are having check-ins between sessions, like a coffee mm-hmm. date, or just a sit-down when the kids are asleep. So you're
saying we should spend time together as a couple.
Yeah, they're spending time together. Oh, they're putting in regular time for date nights. That's
even more homework.
They're even talking before the session, planning what they're going to talk about in the session.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, those are the people who get the most out of therapy. Yeah, they really good. Do. And the thing is they avoid this thing called feeling thrown under the bus. So if mm-hmm. you talk before the session mm-hmm. about what you're going to talk about, then you don't feel like you just threw me under the bus with that. You're prepared
for it.
Yeah, you know what you're going
to
talk
Nobody
about.
Likes to be shotgunned in the face when they're not ready for it. Yeah.
Well, and everybody says it. Like, in that first session, somebody will bring up, well, you did this. And they're like, and then later in that next session.
You don't
session,
know what to say. It kind of makes you freeze up.
Yeah.
I get that whenever somebody like brings up the past, a random argument we used to have. And then all of mm-hmm. a sudden I'm like, mm-hmm. well, I haven't really prepared myself, so I can do one of the things, ignore it, or get really angry. I'm going to go with the
that
second one.
That makes sense. Yeah. So that's what's happening that's what to people in
session.
It
frustrates people, yeah.
Because it's like, well, that's the other thing that's a problem. So people are trying to both resolve things in the here and now, but they're also sometimes dealing with like years of resentment or hurt. And so like, where do you focus? Do you focus on rebuilding the hurt and fixing the hurt, or do you focus on going forward? And essentially you have to do both. You can't do one or the other, or one of them's going to feel hurt because they're like, well, how am I supposed to move forward when I'm still holding on to all this hurt? Whereas the other one, if you don't focus on the present and making change in the present, then they're going to feel like, we keep going to the past. I'm sick of this.
Yeah, that's great, babe. It sounds like you really find some great ways to help people.
I love therapy.
I've always been curious about what actually happens in there.
What are your thoughts about therapy? Like, do you like it? Do you not like it? Are you like, ugh, I think therapy's weird? Because I know you hear me talk about it, but I'm actually curious what your opinion is about therapy.
For me, I've done it twice. Mm-hmm. And the first one was actually when I was a child. I was 15. Uh-huh. That's still a child. And yeah. I didn't have... What was crazy is, like, my mother wanted me to go. She didn't like what was going on with my... how I was acting. So she dragged me there. I did not want to go. I was so against going. And then I got there, and the guy, the therapist, was really nice. And he was really welcoming. And I had some very valid concerns with how my mother was treating me. And he respected that. He didn't just bow down to what my mother wanted. He instead said, well, why don't we work on all of this? And she immediately took us out of there.
Because that's why I don't like working
because
with kids.
She didn't want to actually have any of the problem be her fault. She just wanted him to fix me mm-hmm. and her to walk away. And the reality is that's not how you heal.
Yeah.
And I never really got any benefit from it then. I think I could have because he seemed like a really respectable, nice guy. Mm-hmm. And which is weird because...
Can I talk a little bit about that? Because, I mean, that's a big reason why some therapists struggle, and I struggle with working with kids. So it's not that I don't like kids. I love children.
Oh, me too.
But in order to really work well with kids or teens, you really have to have the parents be a part of it, and you have to somehow get them working together.
You have to trick them.
You
have to make them think it was their idea.
Yeah, well, and it's hard because parents sometimes come in blaming their kids, and that sounded like an example where your mom was my son's crazy. And really, you both probably needed to work on things as a team, and the therapist was probably trying to convince her of that. But because she had a different plan, it's like, see a therapist.
He was trying to convince her not to burn my Dungeons & Dragons books.
That was probably something that made you happy. Books.
Yeah, I had spent... I didn't have a lot of money as a teenager, and I had saved and bought these books that were like $30 a piece. I had like 3 books, and she just took them away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what are you doing? And that was why. She was a very religious person, and she saw in the 90s there was this big push against Dungeons & Dragons, as if to say it was somehow demonic and they were like calling demons and spirits. And
were you conjuring demons in your home? Let's be honest, Josh.
I was, but I wasn't doing it while I played Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, that's funny.
That was done in my pentagram circle in my backyard.
That was in a completely different hobby circle.
That's totally exactly it. Yeah.
She was targeting the wrong thing.
She was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I felt like I could have gotten a lot out of it because I connected with him right away. And I think young men sometimes need that. They need an older guy who can be a mentor and really kind of be there for them. And I think a lot of guys A lot of kids miss out on that.
Well, and thinking of your Dungeons and Dragons, everybody needs an outlet. So yeah, like Dungeons and Dragons is a hobby that's fun and interesting. Being around friends, you want to be with people. And sometimes it's hard for parents because they'll be like, oh, I don't know if I trust these friends. But like, you can't like remove the kids from those friends if those are their only friends, or they'll be isolated.
Oh, but my mother did. I know. My mother did. She totally removed me from my friends. She said I couldn't spend time with them. And she even went so far as to go up to the school and make sure I was not in any of their classes. Anyway,
that's rough. Let's move on.
We got a little we got a little too deep there about my mother. If my mother's listening,
everybody has a little bit of story about their mother or dad from childhood.
Don't worry, Mom. I still love you very much. Anyway, so let's move on to the next topic, and it has to do with modern technology in the world of sex. Originally, the first big technological leap with sex was the vibrator. I think that was one of the biggest ones, and they called it a back massager back then because nobody would use it on their genitals, of course.
Well, I think they did make it for the back, too.
Well, they called it that, but it was shaped like a penis, so I don't know whose back needs a penis rubbed on it.
It was for very specific points.
I actually found a couple of interesting technologies that are coming out, and they're making smart sex toys. And the first one is a Kegel tracker, and this actually has a lot to do with what you do because you work with clients who have pain during sex and other things like that. One of the exercises that the physical therapists give you, that you work with, that you know, they give the Kegel exercises. And this device, you insert it, it's like a balloon, and it tracks your Kegels. So it'll actually measure how intensely you're doing it, how many you do it, and it's like a workout tracker. It's kind of like a Fitbit for your vagina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe I should tell people a little about it. So like I have a few of these materials at my office too, but like let's learn for people who don't know about Kegels or pelvic floor exercises. Let's describe that. So this is for women who are experiencing pain during intercourse. And one piece of information that every woman needs to know is 1 out of 3 women experiences painful intercourse at some point in their life. There are 2 times when they happen the most. One is if you have an episiotomy and your scar tissue basically heals too tight and the vagina is not loose enough, then that's a time where you'll have painful sex. And the second time is after menopause, because estrogen is required to lubricate the vagina. And basically after menopause, your hormones go off.
Oh, you don't get as much estrogen?
You don't get as estrogen or testosterone. Testosterone is required to have desire for women. So those are 2 things that change. So anyhow, back to the electronic device. What we do to help people, in addition to either like medical treatments or sex therapy, is physical therapy. And physical therapy helps women to strengthen the muscle area and relax the area. You need to be able to do both to have good sex. And so a Kegel exercise is essentially squeezing that pelvic floor muscle. And the pelvic floor muscle is the muscles that encompass the vagina and the hips and even a little bit into the thighs. Like it's everything right there at your seat. Okay.
Yeah.
And so Kegels are helping you to both squeeze and release because you have to do both, right? You have to be able to tense the muscles, then relax them.
Right.
And so then those things are helping people track that.
Do you know any clients who've used a device like that?
Yeah, actually anybody who does physical therapy does some sort of device, whether it is dilators or a device like that, or I have one at my office.
It's kind of like a vibrator ball kind of thing.
What's that?
They do like a Benoit ball or something.
Yeah, well, usually a dilator is just like it's almost like a dildo, but that doesn't vibrate, and they have different sizes to help women like get used to bigger size penis in their vagina. And you try to make the biggest dilator the same size as their partner's penis if they're with a man with a, you know, because they could be with a woman or somebody else.
Sure. Well, sounds good. The other technology I saw, which is actually a little more funny, is a cock ring that tracks your progress. It tracks your intensity, it tracks your rhythm, and it tracks your longevity. So it'll actually keep track of how many times you're hitting it and how many times you're moving.
I love it.
And it'll tell you at the end of the day how well you did. And you can track yourself. How do you like that? Would you ever try something like that?
If a guy wanted to, I could see a man who's struggling with premature ejaculation using something like that. Mm-hmm. And a cock ring, just in case you don't know what that is just this ring that you put at the base of the penis. It tightens it and it helps keep blood in the penis. So some men who are experiencing erectile dysfunction use cock rings to keep their erection for a time if they don't want to use like medicine, for example.
Right.
Or they'll use it in combination with medicine. But so anyhow, the cock ring, what it might do then is if they're trying to get longer, like than 5 minutes, mm-hmm. 5 minutes is the average, by the way, for most penetrative men during sex.
Long.
Well, it's important for guys to know because they think some guys are hitting the average and they think they're still short.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't learn to go longer. There are quite a few exercises people can use to get longer.
Yeah, but you don't want to go too long.
Well, you don't want to go too long.
After
that is
about
true.
45 minutes, I'm like, my back hurts. Get off me.
I think the women kind of get tired too. They're like, really? Are we still doing this? Yeah, I mean, get this rolling.
You've definitely said that. You're like, move it along. Nothing to see here.
Well, I mean, penetrative sex is fun, but it's not the best part of sex to me. Yeah. I think foreplay is great. I think like doing the mind games where you guys are talking and you're kind of engaging in fantasy. Like to me, sex is a big, wide variety of things. And so like while penetrative sex is a piece of it, it's only like, it's not the best piece. It's one good piece, but there's quite a few awesome pieces to sex.
It's kind of the piece de resistance. It's kind of the top of the cake, the cherry on the cake, you know.
It is, sure.
It's an important part, I think.
Sure. I just think sometimes people get so wrapped up in sex having to be that they miss out on a lot of really great parts of sex.
Yeah.
And if you think it has to be that and like something's wrong, like somebody has ED or somebody has painful sex, then what? Is it like, we can either have sex or not. And that's part of my job as a sex therapist too, is teaching people, no, you can have sex in a wide variety of ways.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's all we have for today. I'm Joshua Skirtu.
And I'm Angela Skirtu.
And this has been us talking about sex.
Yep.
So
join us next week.
What are we going to talk about next week, Angela?
Oh, we could talk about a lot of things. Let's see.
Maybe we'll talk about breasts.
Oh, we should talk about breasts. Sounds good. Talk about breasts next week,
everybody.
See ya.
Bye.